We're reading today from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is text 289 to 291, and you have on the board 291. So I will read through 289 to 90, and then we'll repeat the verse when it gets to 291. Text 289. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then admitted to his pure devotee, Ramananda Rai, "Now there is no confidential activity unknown to you. Even though I try to conceal my activities, you can understand everything in detail by virtue of your advanced love for me." So just to give a bit of a recap, we're still on the chapter of talks between Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Rai. I remember giving class 6 months ago, we're still on the same chapter. I think this chapter has a lot of verses, and we've been on this for quite a few months, and this, you know, it's a long conversation, so it's still going on, and I think we're reaching the end of the chapter. The talks are coming to a conclusion. So this is verse 290. The Lord then requested Ramananda Rai, "Keep all these talks a secret. Please do not expose them anywhere and everywhere. Since my activities appear like those of a madman, people may take them lightly and laugh." Text 291. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then said, "Indeed, I am a madman and you are also a madman. Therefore, we are on the same platform." Purport. All these conversations between Ramananda Rai and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appear ludicrous to a common man who is not a devotee. The entire world is filled with material conceptions, and people are unable to understand these conversations due to the conditioning of mundane philosophy. Those who are overly attached to mundane activities cannot understand the ecstatic conversations between Ramananda Rai and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Consequently, the Lord requested that Ramananda Rai keep all these conversations secret and not expose them to the general populace. If one is actually advanced in Krishna consciousness, he can understand these confidential talks. Otherwise, they appear crazy. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore informed Ramananda Rai that they both appeared like madmen and were therefore on the same platform. It is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 2:69. Yanisha sarva bhutanam tasyam jagrati samyami yasyam jagrati bhutani sanisha pasyato munahe. What is night for all beings is the time of awakening for the self-controlled, and the time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective sage. Sometimes Krishna consciousness appears like a type of madness to mundane people, just as the activities of mundaners are considered a form of madness by Krishna conscious men. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha jai shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri advaita gadadhara shivasadi gaura bhakta vrinda hare krishna 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 hare 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 rama 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 hare 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 Krishna. So before I start, I would like to seek the blessings of all the Vaishnavas assembled here and online, and senior devotees, Premanama Prabhu, Govinda Prabhu, Aja Govinda Prabhu, and Sachi Mata, and Subhekshana Mataji. Yeah. So, and Prayojana Prabhu, thank you for bringing it to my notice, Prayojana Prabhu as well, and all the others who I may have forgotten. I'm sort of getting blind as I get old, so sometimes I don't see very well. And all the devotees online, so with your blessings, hopefully I can, at the very least, try and not make a fool out of myself, but otherwise just say something useful. As a human race, we are very curious, okay? We are very, very curious as a human race. And in the past few centuries, we've made a lot of progress, especially in material things. If in the 1800s you told someone that, you know, in 100 years' time we'd be flying 35,000 feet in the air, they wouldn't believe you. They would think you're mad. What sort of a thing is that, okay? Even when the Wright brothers were trying to invent an airplane, they were constantly being told, stop this madness, flying is for birds, humans can't fly. Okay? But now, it's such a common thing. You jump on a plane, you go somewhere, you're in Dublin in, you know, 45 minutes. It's just ridiculous. You can go around the world in like 10 hours. Well, not around the world, across the world. So it's very easy to fly. But some time ago, people wouldn't have accepted that. We've gone into space, okay, because we're curious. We want to see what's out there in the dark. We've gone to the moon, so they say. And there are many, many things we've done, technological advancement, which people wouldn't believe you, but it's happening today. It's all happening today. And Krishna consciousness is also very similar. It's just like that, okay? When you hear about amazing devotees, and the conversations, you'd normally think, that's crazy, that doesn't make any sense. It's totally ridiculous. And that's the point Prabhupada is making here, that conversations which are on a high transcendental platform, for us mundaners, lowly people, it wouldn't make any sense. You'd think some people are crazy. And that's why we should always be careful. Sometimes we advance in Krishna consciousness and we don't know. But sometimes when we talk to other people out there and they find our conversations crazy, sometimes it may not be advancement, it just may be the language we get used to as devotees. And you can have a full-on conversation and somebody will think, what did he just say? It's just full of so much jargon. Okay? Sometimes, if conversations happen on the same level, they're easy to understand. If conversations are on a completely different level, they're unbelievable. And that's why Lord Chaitanya is telling Ramananda Rai, if you read the whole chapter in one go, you can give it a try. Just the translations, you'll see how the conversation progresses from the very basic understanding of philosophy, and it keeps getting higher and higher and deeper until you get to a point where you're thinking, what's going on here? Okay, you kind of lose track of things. And that's why Lord Chaitanya warns Ramananda Rai that don't mention these conversations to other people, otherwise they won't understand and they'll make fun of me. Okay? They'll think I'm a sentimentalist. And people say that, isn't it? Devotees are sentimentalists. You're just sentimentalist. Even when Lord Chaitanya was in Varanasi singing and dancing, the Mayavadis accused him that he's just a sentimentalist. But what they don't see is behind this sentimentalism, it's not really sentimentalism. There's a lot of knowledge, understanding and intelligence that goes beyond it, behind it. And the practice of Krishna consciousness has advanced them to such a level, I'm talking about advanced devotees, that now it's impossible for you to relate to them because you're just on a different level. They're not sentimental, it's just you don't understand them. Okay? So Lord Chaitanya is not a sentimental person, but he's aware, he's well aware that people might mistake him to be so. And so he says, do not discuss these in public. Once Srila Prabhupada was in his room, and one devotee, you know, he used to sit with his disciples, and a new guest came into his room, and Srila Prabhupada turned to Shyam Sundar Prabhu, who was there, and he said, you answer this question. Okay, Prabhupada used to do this on many occasions. He used to just pick somebody and say, you answer the question, you answer. So on this occasion, he picked Shyam Sundar Prabhu, who answered the person's question very nicely, and then he went on and on, all the way up to the gopis' love for Krishna. And I think when the devotee left, Prabhupada told him, you have told him too much. Prabhupada said, you have told him too much. So sometimes we think, when a guest visits the temple, that we have to tell them everything because this may be the only time we see him. He's here, we should tell him everything. We show him the deities, tell him about Krishna consciousness, tell him about worshipping the deities, the five rasas, you know, the gopis dance with Krishna and, you know, God is a blue boy who dances with girls and, you know, also we tell him everything because we think we need to tell them everything. Otherwise, who knows, this is their only chance. Maybe they'll never come back. Let me just tell them everything. So we should be careful. One of the 10 offenses is also to instruct a faithless person about the glories of the holy name. You can tell them to chant, that's okay, but to go deep into the glories of the holy name and to explain too much detail that they are beyond, that is beyond their understanding because they haven't reached that level where they can understand it, would be an offense. So certain topics in the Bhagavatam, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we have to sort of slowly make our way there over many, many years. It's just like that. That's why Prabhupada said, you start with the Bhagavad Gita, you read, you understand, you go on to the Bhagavatam, you read the Nectar of Instruction, you read other books, and slowly you can get to the confidential topics. And Prabhupada said, these will come in time. Okay, Prabhupada never went into the details of any confidential topics. So it's very interesting that we're curious, but curiosity itself for finding out things is not the only way. There is more to curiosity, isn't it? When you see wet paint on a door and there is a sign saying wet paint, you want to touch it, don't you? It's like, you know, it's or it's on a bench, okay, wet paint. So you won't sit on there because you know, but you still want to touch it just to check, isn't it? How many of you have done that? I've done it, definitely. Wet paint. Let me just make sure it's wet. Okay, like that. Someone tells you, don't look behind that door, and the guy goes out for 2 minutes. You kind of have to look, isn't it? It's like, we're very, very curious. But curiosity itself is not enough. There is a process for acquiring knowledge. I heard one morning walk of Srila Prabhupada where he explains, where he tells a story. He says, there was a young boy, and he was playing the drum, and it was making a sound. He was playing a mridanga. He says, it's an old Bengali story. He says, he was playing a mridanga, and he was making a sound, and he was very curious, where is the sound coming from? So he took a knife and he cut the drum open because the sound was coming from inside. And Prabhupada said, that is intelligence. And then his disciples around him are confused. They said, Prabhupada, how is that intelligence? He just destroyed the drum. Prabhupada said, yes, but he was curious. You can find another drum. But he was curious and he made an endeavor to satisfy his curiosity. So that is intelligence. Okay? It's very interesting. Our philosophy doesn't usually subscribe to the norms. Okay? But curiosity isn't sufficient. There is a process to acquiring knowledge. There is a process to acquiring mundane knowledge, and there is also a process to acquire spiritual knowledge. Now, there are many processes of obtaining knowledge, which are explained in especially Nyaya philosophy, Vaisheshika philosophy, it is mentioned. Patanjali mentions 6 in the Yoga Sutras, But in a book called the Jaiva Dharma, Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions 8. Okay, 8 ways of attaining knowledge. Okay, 8 processes. Do you know the 8? So first of all, the first one is pratyaksha. Okay, pratyaksha means direct perception. Okay, you see something, you know it's there. Okay, that's pratyaksha. Second one is anuman. Anuman means inference. Okay, it's wet outside and everything is wet. All of the grass is wet. It must have rained. Okay, that is inference, anuman. Then the third philosophy he explains is upaman. Okay, upaman means analogy. Okay, it works similar. I've seen something happen and something similar is happening here, hence it may be the same thing that's happening. Okay, analogy, that is also a method of acquiring knowledge. Sometimes we don't know, but we see something similar. Okay, then is shabda. Shabda means sound. So by hearing, okay, you learn something by hearing. That is shabda, shabda philosophy. The fifth is called aitiya, traditional knowledge. So sometimes you hear these stories in Vrindavan, Braja stories or local stories. They're not in any scripture, but they've been passed down through tradition. Okay, so Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that is also proof to some degree. You can't disregard it just because it's not written down anywhere. That is also proof because it's carried through tradition. Another one is anupalabdhe. Okay, anupalabdhe, which means knowledge deduced from the non-perceived. Okay, so it means I've been around the world and I can't see any dinosaurs, hence dinosaurs don't exist, or they're all extinct, okay, because I can't see them. You proving something based on what you can't see. Okay, that is also a form of acquiring knowledge. Another one is arthapatti, which means derivative knowledge. Okay, which means you have something and you can derive an answer from it. The roads are wet, okay, but there are no clouds. It's possibly not rained, but there is an elephant down the road. Which means I can derive that maybe the cause of the road being wet is the elephant, okay, or a few elephants, like that. Derived knowledge. And the eighth one is sambhava, probability. Okay, based on probability, interestingly, that is also a form of acquiring knowledge, probability. So you can attain knowledge of the world in many, many different ways. In the Yoga Sutras, if you read the Yoga Sutras, Patanjali Muni explains that you can actually understand the self and you can understand God through just logic and reasoning. Okay? And according to these 8, that is one of the methods. You can understand who you are and you can understand who God is through just logic. And in the Yoga Sutras, he takes you through a whole system. If you read them, there's a very good book by a person called Edwin Bryant, and I understand he's a Prabhupada disciple. I don't know his name, but I was just told. So he's written a good book on the 7, on the Yoga Sutras. But if you read them, you understand that you can understand the self and you can understand God through just logic and reasoning. You don't really need much evidence. People are always asking for evidence, but you don't need much. But what you can't do is you cannot experience these things. Okay? You cannot have experience, physical experience that you're the self, or you cannot have an experience of the divine, of God, through just knowledge. Okay, knowledge can only take you up until a certain point. But to gain more knowledge than what knowledge can give you through your senses, there is another process, okay, which can help you get knowledge of transcendence. Once you have experience of these things, then this knowledge doesn't really matter to you, isn't it? Once you experience something, like for example, you're in a kirtan, okay, you're in an amazing kirtan just like we were. A while ago, Mali was singing, and when you're in a kirtan and you experience bliss, you're dancing, you're jumping, and then some scientist comes to you and goes, "Mate, it's just dopamine in your head." You go, "Get out of here. You know, what do you know? You guys can't even launch a rocket. Get out of here." There was just last week or 2 weeks ago, It was all over the news that the first ever UK launch of a rocket, okay, from Europe airspace, the first ever in the history of the world, there's never been a rocket launched from European soil through European and British intelligence. It's going to happen. It's going to happen through Virgin Orbit. Okay, they're going to, you know, Richard Branson and his crew, and then the UK government, we're all going to come together. We're going to launch a rocket from Cornwall, and you can watch it live. It's going to be a horizontal launch, a simplified version, which means you fly a plane, okay, to 35,000 feet, and you launch a rocket from there. What happened? It was telecast live. There was a big hoo-ha. It just burned. The rocket carried 9 satellites. They all burned. So that's my line now. You guys can't even launch a rocket. But Prabhu, it's just dopamine. Get out of here. You guys can't even launch a rocket. Okay, get out. So like that, once you had the experience of Krishna consciousness, you don't really care about what people are telling you because you already experienced it, isn't it? So this is what's happening here. So Ramananda Rai is a pure devotee. Lord Chaitanya, of course, is in the role of a pure devotee. And they've experienced things and they've reached that level of transcendence. Okay, and the conversations are completely on a different level. And at that point, logic doesn't really matter so much. You've gone past that. Logic can take you up until a certain point. Do you know what logic and reasoning is for and if it's important? Do you think it's important? Logic and reasoning in spiritual life. Is it important? Why is it important? Prayojan Prabhu wants to say something. Go on. I think he's waiting for a mic.
The book I got once was The Science of Self-Realization.
Mm-hmm.
And that introduced this whole new world of the logic of God.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, logic and reasoning will bring you there through Prabhupada, actually.
Mm-hmm.
He was so amazing in his English that it can grab you. And so his logic and reasoning were incredible. So I would say Prabhupada's the example for bringing us Krishna consciousness
into this language. Thank you, Prayojan Prabhu. See, in the beginning stages, when there is no faith, you need logic and reasoning to establish some faith. Okay, so logic and reasoning. Shishirada Gokulananda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Gornitai Ki Jai. So logic and reasoning can take you up until a certain point, enough just to get you to have enough faith so you can start practicing Krishna consciousness. That's what logic and reasoning is for. You can theoretically understand concepts of the soul, about God, all these things, just to get you to have enough faith so you can start practicing Krishna consciousness. It is the beginning. But once you start practicing Krishna consciousness, the way you acquire knowledge is different, because logic and reasoning takes you only so far. Okay? The deeper concepts of knowledge you have to receive, you only understand when you practice Krishna consciousness and when you elevate to a higher degree, because that knowledge is revealed to you in the heart. Okay? Theoretical knowledge you can understand, but when you practice, that's when you go and have that experience of Krishna consciousness and really understand things, okay? The question is, I always ask this question, how does Ramananda Rai know what he knows? Okay, where did he learn everything from? Okay, apparently if you listen to this conversation, it seems like Lord Chaitanya is asking Ramananda Rai for answers. Okay, he's asking, okay, what about this? What about that? What about that? And then Ramananda Rai is replying, and he reveals to Lord Chaitanya the highest and the deepest secrets of Krishna consciousness. But how did he know? Who was his guru? Where did he learn it from? So, huh? I don't know. Yeah. In fact, there is There is a verse, we just went past it, in verse 198, Ramananda Rai says, okay, this is what he says. He says, I do not know what I am saying, but you have made me speak what I have spoken, be it good or bad. I am simply repeating that message. Okay? So, he says, so basically what's happening here is Lord Chaitanya is actually using Ramananda Rai as an instrument to reveal the deepest secrets. So he is, Ramananda Rai is saying, I'm only speaking what you are making me speak. Okay? This knowledge at a certain level is revealed to you, these deeper secrets. Theoretically we know, because it's in the book. It's funny, I always find this funny, like Lord Chaitanya told Ramananda Rai, don't tell this to anybody, but it's in a book now. Obviously he wasn't listening. How did it get to a book if he didn't tell anybody? He must have told somebody, that's how he made it to a book. But the point is, it can be in a book, you can read it, but you won't really understand it. Okay, there is theoretical understanding from, okay, this fits here, that fits there, logically it all makes sense, I understand the six rasas or the different things, I understand how it all fits in and makes sense, theoretically, okay? But the real understanding is something different. When you go through that experience by advancement in Krishna consciousness, that's when the penny drops, okay? I'm not there yet. I'll let you know if I am, okay? So it's also interesting that Lord Chaitanya says in the earlier verse that I cannot even hide this from you because you are a devotee. I cannot even hide this information from you. How did you know? Okay, if you look at this verse, 289. Okay, now there is no confidential activity unknown to you. Even though I try to conceal my activities, you can understand everything in detail by virtue of your advanced love for me. When you develop love for Krishna, that amount of love, even Krishna cannot hide himself from you when you have that amount of love. Okay, that's what he's telling Ramananda Rai here. You know, Krishna wants to hide himself, but when Mother Yashoda looks into his mouth, she sees the universe. I don't know if Krishna's thinking, well, let's have a bit of fun and let's confuse her or something. Even when the gopis, when Krishna is in his Narayan form and the gopis are looking for him and they figure it out, Krishna can't hold on to that form, okay? Because out of love, even Krishna can't conceal himself. So the real way to get knowledge, the deepest secrets, is to use your logic and reasoning to practice Krishna consciousness. And if you do it sincerely, under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master, then you will go through the different processes of bhakti, you will attain pure love of God, and when you attain that state, that knowledge becomes manifest in your heart. Okay, that's how it works. That is a step-by-step process. Logic and reasoning is to give you enough faith so you can start practicing. There is also the story of Rupa Goswami and Lord Chaitanya, that during the Rath Yatra festival, Lord Chaitanya chants a certain verse. Okay? And no one could understand its meaning. Okay, you know that verse? No one can understand its meaning. And usually, when Lord Chaitanya would be in one of his ecstatic moods and he would chant a verse, people generally wouldn't understand. Okay, they would be like, what's he talking about? What's that got to do with anything? Okay, it sounds totally unrelatable. But there is a deeper meaning, and usually only Swarup Damodar would understand it. But Rupa Goswami, he goes back to his hut and he takes a palm leaf and he composes a verse that explains the meaning of that verse that Lord Chaitanya had chanted, and he writes it on a palm leaf, sticks it in the thatched roof of his hut, and then he goes away. And Lord Chaitanya, he would usually go and see Rupa Goswami, and he goes, he finds that verse and he goes, how did he understand it? And when Rupa Goswami comes, he slaps him nicely, not like a big slap, nice slap, and he tells him, how did you know? And then Swarup Damodar says, I can understand that you have already bestowed your causeless mercy upon him. No one could otherwise understand this meaning. Okay, so if you really, really, really want to understand the deepest secrets of Krishna consciousness, you have to wait for Krishna to bestow his mercy upon you. Okay, and how does that mercy come? I'm sure somebody else will tell you. But the idea is it'll come through service, through sincerity, and there are many, many ways. And that when you get that mercy, when you're a recipient of that mercy, that's when, you understand things on a different level. So, the point is, if you're already in Krishna consciousness, if you're already practicing Krishna consciousness, then you might as well do it wholeheartedly. That's the point. I was chanting one day, and I chant every day, but one of these days I was chanting really bad rounds, and I had a realization at the end, and my realization was that whether you chant good rounds or bad rounds, it still takes 2 hours. Okay, that was my realization. It's going to take you 2 hours anyway. Okay, even if you chant really bad rounds. In fact, bad rounds take longer sometimes. Okay, but why do we chant bad rounds? Because we want to finish them. But then it actually ends up taking longer. So that was my realization. If you're chanting, you might as well chant good rounds. Okay, might as well focus and chant. So the idea is, if you're practicing Krishna consciousness, if you're already in the practice, you've taken up the process, you've gone past that stage of logic and reasoning, and you have enough faith to keep on practicing Krishna consciousness, then you might as well do it properly. Okay, you might as well do it properly. And if you do it half-heartedly, then you'll be hovering on the same plane for the rest of your life. But if you do it properly, you just might get that mercy. Okay, now Srila Prabhupada, there is one conversation, and I can't remember who it was, but I heard it in one of these videos on YouTube, okay, the Prabhupada Memories videos, and somebody had done something wrong, and Prabhupada was chastising him, and then he was giving Prabhupada reasons why he couldn't do it. But Prabhupada, I couldn't do this. No, why couldn't you do that? He said, but Prabhupada, this happened. Well, why did that happen? But I was very busy doing service. No, why were you so busy doing service? And Prabhupada just kept saying why to everything. Till the end he said, and this devotee got frustrated. He said, Prabhupada, because I'm not a pure devotee like you. And Prabhupada goes, well, why are you not a pure devotee? You know who it was? Govinda Prabhu, I don't know who it was. He goes, why are you not a pure devotee? The point is, Prabhupada was trying to make, it's not that Prabhupada is the only pure devotee in ISKCON, or Prabhupada is the only pure devotee in the whole world. And it's not like Prabhupada is saying that, look, I'm a pure devotee, but you guys will never get to where I am, but you can try, here's the practice. It's not that Prabhupada gave us an impossible practice. It's not like he gave us a Krishna conscious practice that we can practice but will never become pure, like Prabhupada. Prabhupada's point was, the practice has a reason, Krishna consciousness practice, that anybody, if they do it sincerely, they can become a pure devotee. Okay? So don't think that you can't become pure by practice. But don't start thinking you become pure now. You've achieved it. Okay? That is also a wrong mentality. But the practice is there, and if you do it sincerely, you can be a pure devotee, and you can understand all the deepest secrets of Krishna consciousness. It is a valid and bona fide process. Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any questions or comments or anything? We got 5 minutes. Anybody for any questions or comments? Kamal Prabhu and then Arun Prabhu.
Harishabhu, thank you for the wonderful class.
Okay, Arun Prabhu and then Kamal Prabhu. Go on.
Yeah, so my question was like, in the Bhagavatam also you have certain examples. You have Rishabhdev and you have Jadabharat who, their pastimes or their leelas were very difficult to understand. So as devotees, like, how can we, like, what should we infer or learn from their pastimes?
There are a lot of pastimes which are difficult to understand. What you can understand is you can understand them logically, but what you can also see is that the dedication that these devotees had. One thing I learned from the Bhagavatam, which always amazes me, is that you would think that when someone becomes a pure devotee, everything is okay, it's all hunky-dory, you're very, nicely practicing Krishna consciousness, you're all happy, and then you go back to Godhead. But there is not a single story in the Bhagavatam like that. Every story in the Bhagavatam is, this guy became a devotee, he became a pure devotee, and he suffered. And then, they tried to throw him off a cliff, okay? They tried to, give him poison, and he suffered, and he suffered, and he suffered. And then you think, why? What's the point? You know, if I become a pure devotee, it only gets worse. But the point here being made here is that you will notice that because they are pure devotees, even in the greatest of suffering, they never give up their faith in Krishna, and they always know that Krishna will protect them. Okay, rakshishyati iti vishwaso. Okay, they know that Krishna will protect them in the greatest of calamity. So what, it's poison, I'll drink it. I know Krishna will protect me. So don't try that. But the point is that they have that level of faith. So even if we can't understand the story, we can understand the lessons behind the story, and we can see how sincere they are and how much faith they have. And compared to them, our faith is very minimal. It's like, you know, it only takes a small, you know, does God really exist? I lost my job. Okay, I know it's a difficult situation if you lose your job, but at the same time, you know, it's not as bad as being thrown off a cliff by your dad. Okay, so like Prahlad Maharaj. So what we can learn is that these devotees have an amazing amount of faith and surrender, and they're really devoted to Krishna. Then know Krishna will protect them in all circumstances. So. Lessons from the story, yeah. Lessons from the devotees. Thank you. Kamal Prabhu and then Govinda Prabhu. Hare Krishna.
At the beginning you mentioned that for devotees very advanced, we won't understand them. All the conversations are transcendental, we may not understand. And sometimes we find in ISKCON there's misunderstandings. It could be due to someone's more conservative, someone's liberal, and we can't understand each other. On occasions it may be because the devotee's too advanced. And my question is, when we have this misunderstanding, I'd love to hear from you, how could we proceed without making offences but still kind of work in harmony as an organisation, yeah. If that makes sense.
Just to get some more context to your question, do you mean like in terms of managing things, in terms of...
For example, you may be doing a service and you're trying to come to an agreement on how something may be managed and... Yeah. You just can't come to an understanding. You can't understand this devotee.
Yeah. So thank you. Thank you for that question. Now, first of all, I think those misunderstandings are slightly different from these misunderstandings. So this is because they're on a totally different transcendental platform. And that's why people who are not on that platform can't understand them. Those misunderstandings may be, but they also may not be on that level. It may be a different kind of understanding in the sense that we have our own ideas of how things should happen. Somebody else has an idea of things should happen. And that's why sometimes not all differences can be harmonized. Sometimes differences can't be harmonized. Sometimes differences just have to be tolerated. Okay? We try too hard sometimes. Sometimes we should just... If we can harmonize them, great. We should just meet and discuss and try and harmonize them. But sometimes it's just not possible because ISKCON is made up of many, many different personalities coming from many, many different backgrounds. We all grow up in a different way and we put them all together. And sometimes I think that, you know, the people I hang out with, if I wasn't a devotee, I would never hang out with these guys. You know, it's like, I'm not going to hang out with him, you know. It's like, no. But he's a devotee. So, you know, this is what we got. But the point is that sometimes we may not all get along with each other. Okay, but this is what we have. And if you can't harmonize your differences, then at least for the sake of avoiding conflict, we tolerate our differences. We try not to get in each other's way. And we sort of work together. You do your thing, I do my thing. But let's just tolerate. If you can harmonize, great. I'm just saying. But if you can't, then we just have to learn to tolerate each other, not get in each other's way, and just keep the movement going. That's my take on things anyway. I'm sure there are many, many ways to resolve these things.
Thanks, Prabhu.
thank you. Govinda Prabhu had a comment or a question or a chastisement.
Oh, thank you for your entertaining class. Thanks. Here's a question. The purport was talking about, you know, they see us as mad, we see them as mad.
Yeah.
Kind of like it's like a divide that cannot be bridged. Yeah. And also we see in the Bhagavad Gita, we talk about, for example, religion in the mode of, say, passion is like, or religion in the mode of ignorance, irreligion is seen as religion and vice versa, etc.
Yeah.
So the whole thing about, when you look at the Bhagavad Gita and you look at this purport, it just paints the picture that this world is extremely disjointed because everyone's coming from a different headspace, and the two different headspaces, they just cannot connect at all, and they see things completely differently. So in that kind of environment, as devotees, what are we actually supposed to be doing? Are we supposed to try and... It doesn't seem possible that we can actually establish truth, even with our family members, for example. Someone who may join Krishna consciousness and then have a complete fallout. So it seems it's a very kind of pessimistic... It's almost like it's a realistic but pessimistic kind of view of the world. Are we supposed to somehow find a way to communicate with all the different types of people, or are we just going to accept, well, just we are the way we are and we just have to accept it?
Yeah. Yeah, thank you, Govinda Prabhu. You know, it is said that a preacher, even if he is an Uttama Adhikari, he comes down to the level of a Madhyama Adhikari just so he can relate to people. But he's not like, it doesn't mean that he's lowering his Krishna consciousness. It just means that he may be very, very advanced internally, but externally he acts as if he's just like a normal guy, just so he can relate to people and he can preach. And I think, however Uttama Adhikaris we may be, I think we can also at least externally try and relate to people for the sake of preaching. I don't know, is that what you were asking?
Well, I mean, that's part of it, yeah. Yeah. Okay, I see what you're saying. If someone's very transcendental, they have better vision, they're better able to understand where a person's at. And
just like be more conscious of the people around you, see where they're at and speak to them on their level. Even though, you know, sometimes, and that's why sometimes it's always, you have to tell people what you want to tell them, but in the way they want to hear it. You see, because you don't want to tell them what they want to hear, because, you know, it's always going to be mundane if they're not devotees. But at the same time, you know, you want to tell them what you want to tell them, but in a soft, nice way, how they want to hear it. That's the art of preaching. You don't compromise your philosophy, but you tell them how they want to hear it. Okay, like that. Thank you. Prayojana Prabhu has another comment. It's coming. No, it's just so people online can hear you.
It was... interesting, but what resolved it for me was Bhagavad Gita 4:35. He says, having obtained this knowledge, you'll never fall again into illusion. You'll never have to come back. For by this knowledge, you will realize that all living beings are but part of the Supreme.
Yeah.
And they belong to me.
Yeah.
So actually, that we're all a family, actually. And that this is part of Krishna.
Yeah.
And everybody is part of Krishna. So we must respect them as ourselves. You know, what is it? Love thy neighbor as thyself.
Mm.
That's a Christian analogy.
Yeah.
So part of Krishna, because they're all part of Krishna. You got to love them at the end of the day, somehow or other.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Prabhupada Prabhu. Any other questions? I don't know, anybody from the ladies' side? Anyone have any questions? Anyone? Yeah. Antaranga Prabhu. Yeah. I can keep going, yeah. I'm not, that love thy neighbor is a very difficult one, isn't it? Sometimes, you know, you don't want to love your neighbors. Our neighbors are okay. We live in a flat where everybody's a devotee, so it's good. But, you know, otherwise, you know, you may not want to love your neighbors, especially if you're married. Antaranga Prabhu?
So we've been discussing how basically the Gyaya, all the logic, and Vedas are kind of important, even our progress in Krishna consciousness, to a certain point where kind of a rasa will overtake. many times when you discuss with other denominations, you see how they have also the very much sentimental presentation of God consciousness, relationships, and so on. And until it comes to a point, you can't understand because you don't love God from my perspective. It comes from to this point. And then you try to introduce logic into that conversation because it's just a sentiment. So how can we as a movement, tradition, sampradaya, enter conversations of sentiment from a perspective of logic? Because even if you speak about concepts of rasa, there's wisdom behind it. There's nectar of devotion. There's different explanations of the acharyas, which explains rasa and how logic sort of supports rasa. So how can we enter a conversation with other people which we can present, look, your sentiment is mental. Our sentiment is logically supported. Can we have that discussion? Is it possible?
So just to get some more context, are you talking about other Vedic sampradayas or other religions like Christianity, or what are you talking about?
Just a general concept.
I think debate can only be held on common grounds, what you both agree on. If you keep quoting your scriptures and they keep quoting their scriptures, you'll never get to a conclusion on that. So it can only be held in things that you both agree on. So I think before a debate or before a discussion, it's always good to establish, well, what's the basis? And generally, logic seems to be a good basis. Within Vedic circles, the thing that everybody agrees on, this is what Shankaracharya came up with, the thing that everybody, all Vedic sampradayas agree on, is what he called the Prasthana Trayi, which is the Bhagavad Gita, the Upanishads, and the Puranas, I think, isn't it? Bhagavad Gita, Vedanta Sutra, and the Upanishads. This is what in Vedic circles you can debate on, whereas in not Vedic circles you just have to say, look, we can keep going back and forth, but we need to agree on a common basis. Usually, Krishna consciousness is well supported logically. Other religions, maybe, but I don't know. I find it very interesting. One of my friends did that Alpha course that is taught, just to see how it was. And interestingly, they start with lesson one is, all right, so you have faith in Jesus, okay? And then let's move on. So the starting point, course one is, you have to have faith in Jesus if you want to do the Alpha course. Okay, that's lesson one, and then you start from there. And I sometimes wish maybe they just started one step further, but maybe that's not their aim. They're like, look, if you're interested in Christianity, you have faith in Jesus, you can learn more. I'm not here to convince you whether God exists or not. That's your work. You need to do that yourself in your own way. But once you believe in God, we can come here and make a start. So sometimes it's like that. Whereas we start way before, isn't it? We start like way, way, way before. If you join the Veda course, it's like, okay, we have five senses. Okay, right. Okay. No, literally, it's there on the Veda course. Like, you know, we have five working senses. We have five, you know, knowledge acquiring senses. And we have a mind and we have, you know, working organs and non-working organs or whatever. You know, that's where we start. And then we go slowly, slowly, slowly. And we build up to, like, faith is like in that book. It's like chapter 8 or something. So we start way before, and that's why devotees generally have a very good grounding based on logic and understanding. But other people, maybe they don't need it. They're okay with that. That's okay. But it just makes a debate difficult, and that's why it's good to establish a common ground. Roman Prabhu?
Hare Krishna. Thank you so much for the nice class, Prabhu. I just had a very quick one. You're mentioning that how logic can only take us to a certain point, and we have to experience that a kind of spiritual bliss to go beyond the logic. Now, I think for some of us, material logic in reasoning is actually what keeps us like practicing, you know, because we are not on that level yet where we experience that spiritual bliss. So, how can we take that to a next level? Like besides association, to really start experience that, to go beyond just the material logic and reasoning.
So you never give up your logic. Like if you listen to the definitions of a Kanishta Adhikari, Madhyama and Uttama, okay? A Madhyama is someone who has strong faith based on his understanding, And he's not going to lose his faith, but he can't quote scripture and defeat the other person. But even if he loses, he's not going to give up his faith because he's got strong understanding. And an Uttamadhikari is someone who is also very strong based on his understanding of Shastra and his logic and reasoning. But at the same time, he also has the experience, he also has the sort of transcendental experiences, and he can also quote scripture and he can win a debate, for example. So you never actually give up your logic and reasoning because and your philosophy and your philosophical background, because that's always necessary to give you a strong foundation in Krishna consciousness. So it's not that people who are really, really elevated on the transcendental platform, they've given up the logic. No, logic is a foundation and that always stays. It's just like when you're constructing a building, you build a foundation and then you build on top of it. And it doesn't matter how high you go, the foundation always stays. It's not that you get rid of it. So, yeah, logic is always important and it's always good to have it. But at the same time, once you understood and your faith is strong, okay, I think then you sort of need to make a transition into more service, developing the qualities of a devotee, and serving ultimately, because you only make progress beyond a certain level by the mercy of the Lord and the devotees, and certain understandings are only revealed to you based on mercy of the Lord, which comes through service and things like that. So my realization has been in the past few years that, yeah, you can kind of hang around in a community of devotees. You can do everything nicely, don't tread on anybody's toes, and you can sort of live your whole life like that. But and it's okay. It's okay. It's not, you're not doing anything wrong. You'll probably make progress as well. But at the same time, if you really want to, like, push the limits, break barriers, and enter into different realms, you just have to start taking initiative of serving devotees, pleasing devotees, serving Krishna, take on that extra service that is not on your service schedule in the ashram, you know, things like that. You just have to start doing more and more. You have to make a constant or effort based on your own initiative to make progress in Krishna consciousness. If you don't do that, it's okay. You'll hang around. You'll be there. You'll still get to your destination, but you know, you'll be in a different carriage. You may not be in the first class carriage, but you know, you'll make it through this lifetime with devotees. But I think, anyway, I'm just sharing my realization. I'm not saying this is the absolute fact. I just feel that we just need to do more. Coco, go on. If you need to go, you need to go. Don't wait for me. If you need to wait in the queue, which keeps getting longer and longer every Saturday. Yeah, go on. Sorry.
Yeah, this was just a reflection. I feel like logic is something that's easier to upgrade. It's not easy to for someone else to upgrade your feelings like directly. You have to kind of do that. But they can upgrade your logic almost immediately just by if you have understood what they're saying. And if you can memorize or remember that, that becomes your new mode of thinking about things. And that can really help with your spiritual life because then you're looking at things differently. Yeah. And a lot of the times that mode of logic, it is only the principles behind the phenomenon. So if the phenomenon is there and you learn the logic, you can apply this logic to various phenomenons. So it's just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was like so expert at spinning logic in so many ways. Like he can even explain the spiritual world, why the spiritual world must be like this. Like how, because he has experience, right, of the spiritual world, but he also has some practical understanding of the world. So it's like he's making connections.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think that for us, perhaps it's just easier to use logic to propel our sort of understanding, and then that kind of translates to your experience.
Yeah. No, very good. Thank you. Yeah, logic can always help you in your understanding of things and you can always move forward. But the point I'm making, what's very interesting is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur also mentions in the Chaitanya Shikshamrita that prema, which is love for Krishna, is a property of Krishna. You can't just get it by your own endeavor. You can't just keep saying, okay, I'll do more and more and more and it'll come. No, you only get it when Krishna is pleased with you and he gives it to you. That's how it is. You can't grow prema like, you know, like within yourself by your own endeavors. It has to be given to you by Krishna or Krishna's devotee. Somebody who has it, only they can give it to you. And only Krishna and Krishna's pure devotees have that prema. So if you want prema or love for Krishna, you can't just get it by your own endeavor. You have to get it from either a devotee by pleasing them or pleasing Krishna by your sincere endeavors, like that. Okay. Kishori has a question.
Thank you. It wasn't a question. It was just a reflection from what you were speaking. And I remember that devotee who his spiritual master told him to read the Bhagavad Gita, but he couldn't read. He couldn't read or he couldn't write. He was illiterate. But still every day he would sit in front of the Bhagavad Gita and try to read it. And other people around him would laugh and make fun of him, like, what is he doing? But actually, whenever he would look at the Bhagavad Gita, he would cry because he saw that Krishna was the charioteer of Arjuna. And I think you told me before that, you know, being a charioteer isn't just someone driving a chariot. When you're in battle, the person driving the chariot, their foot will actually be on the charioteer's head. Sorry, the person in the chariot who's fighting, they'll place their foot on that person's head who's driving the chariot, you know, to direct them left or right which way to go. And so when this devotee was seeing how, wow, Krishna is driving a chariot of Arjuna, even that in itself was making him cry with love for Krishna. And he understood the Bhagavad Gita. So I think my kind of understanding is that logic and reasoning is so important so that we don't become sentimental. But at the same time, you can't deny that the practice of bhakti yoga is a lot about emotion and about feeling and, understanding that love. And I think that's why actually Krishna consciousness is so attractive to so many people, because it goes beyond just logic. It goes way deeper than that. So it was just a reflection.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. It's not usually head, it's shoulder, like because there's a lot of noise on a battlefield. So that's how to do it. So I've heard anyway. Ajay Govinda Prabhu. Again, if you need to go, you need to go. Ajay Govinda Prabhu. Sorry, just wait for the mic, Prabhu. Yes.
I was just going to add, like, you know, faith. We were talking about faith. I think comes with a lot of practice.
Yeah.
Like anything you do, when you practice a lot in that, then the faith gradually develops in that.
Yeah.
Same is in the bhakti also. Like you don't have faith in the beginning in the stone, and slowly, slowly you practice it, worship that stone, and slowly, slowly. Because you have, your faith develops in that one day I will get some response back or something. You have that faith. That develops then, slowly, slowly. And then gradually, when the faith becomes very deeper, so then the other things will start to come then.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for sharing that, Ajay Govinda Prabhu. Thank you. All right, we should call it a day. Sorry, at least call it a morning. Thank you all for coming. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai.